Hi there.
Jeff Hoyt here on The Voice of Vashon at KVSH LP Vashon. And you know how I roll. I just find interesting people to talk to and bring them into the studio and take over the airwaves for a little while. So over the next course of, a half hour or so, we are going to visit with Kristen and Ville Jokinen, who are from the Oregon area. We'll get more into specifics on that. But they wrote the book, Kristen did, Joyride, A Bike Odyssey from Alaska to Argentina. Kristen, Ville, welcome.
Thank you.
It's really nice to have you.
Thank you so much for having us. Yes. Nice to finally meet you in person.
Yeah. Now, have you been to Vashon before?
Yes. Okay. Yes. We have friends here, so we've been able to visit a couple times. Such a cool community.
Excellent.
Last summer.
Yeah. Last summer, we actually had one of the summer meets or outdoor
concert
events.
Concert in the park.
Oh, yeah.
We got to come and dance our little butts off for that. It was such a blast.
I think I may have seen you there because I was at that same one with your friends.
Oh, okay.
I'm remembering now. Okay.
We're better cyclists than dancers, so don't judge us if you saw us dancing.
Yeah.
Kristen and Ville did this insane bike ride. The book is called, again, Joyride, A Bike Odyssey from Alaska to Argentina. They started up at the Arctic Circle and finished, a couple years later at the tip of Argentina. And I think I have to start with talking about what I think really is the lead story in this adventure of yours, and that would be how you went into it with so very little training and preparation, that's the insane part to me. And the very first phase of your trip was heading south from the Arctic Circle on a stretch of very isolated, horrible road that was perhaps as punishing as any stretch of road that you encountered on the entire Odyssey. And I was first one to ask you that now, with that whole experience behind you, how do you assess and look back on that decision to go in so thoroughly unprepared?
I would say I'm so glad we were totally unprepared because I think it's this false idea that we are in control of our lives and that we are able to prepare for everything. But the reality is, you know, as we all know, life is going to take us every direction it wants to, right? Mm-hmm. In the course of a journey.
Right.
And so not actually preparing is one of our strong suits because we don't have any preconceived ideas of what something should be.
Uh-huh.
And so we kind of just enjoy and thrive on diving into things that we don't have hardly any experience with. And like, we bought these bikes a week before we took off and we only came up with this idea while through hiking the Pacific Crest Trail in 2011, and which already sounds crazy enough, but I think diving in without experience at least made it more of an adventure. Mm-hmm. Would you say, Ville?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it added so much more of like a true adventure to it that we didn't know what we were up against.
Uh-huh.
And also the first 10 days and the first 500 miles being so brutal that then the next days or weeks or even months after that felt so much easier. When you think like in the first couple of days, oh, is this going to be it for the next 2 years? This hard?
Yeah.
I don't know what we can do. And then once you get back to the pavement out of that gravel and mud, it felt better than I've never had pavement feel so good.
I'll bet.
Yeah. Right. I wanted to get down on the ground and kiss the pavement we finally found and discovered in Fairbanks. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
And it was... How many hundreds of miles did you have to pedal on that bad road before you finally got to that pavement?
It was almost exactly 500.
500 miles.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we did really 10 miles up the road and 10 miles back just to make sure parts didn't fall off when we put the bikes together. And then we boxed them and flew to Brudeau Bay, Alaska, which is on the Arctic Ocean. And it's exactly where we started. And neither of us knew anything about it. It just so happened that Ville said, well, I guess we could start from either Anchorage where there's a road, or we could start from the most northern point with a road that's called Brudeau Bay. And I went, well, obviously, if we're going to do this whole thing, we got to start from the very northernmost point. Who starts from like a little bit south of that? No, we can't do that. Let's start from the top. And so that's truly why we flew up to this place. Never seen, had no idea. And we got up there, and it was really up there. And nothing is up there but an oil field and scientists and oil field workers and us. And we were very out of place flying in there. And
it's where
weather,
the pipeline starts, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. So you became cyclists as you went. Essentially, your legs got stronger, your endurance got longer. When faced with long stretches of boring road, I noticed this happened a few times. In your journey, when you had a choice between just going flat and dull versus going up and more interesting, you guys time and again opted for up and interesting, which is another insane part of this to me. I as I was reading in bed, this book in bed with Cindy was sitting next to me, and I would go, oh my God, they just by choice decided to go up into the mountains, and you just really embrace the adventure in adventure cycling. I thought, does this parallel kind of how you guys live your lives in general?
Yeah, it does. Looking back at our life, I noticed that there's a lot of things. We have a saying in Finland, only dead fish go with the flow. And we've gone against the current a lot, and it has paid off in many ways. Either it has created a lot of adventure, but also like...
Character building,
yeah.
Well, there are plenty of opportunities for
lots
that.
Lots of character building.
Yeah. It's, to some people, it feels maybe like, you know, that we take a lot of risks, mm-hmm. but it's never felt like a risk too big. And we do have somewhat of our risk management, but the adventure is always there. Like if someone says, "Hey, you guys should do this trip. It's going to be nice and safe and cushioned, and you'll be really comfortable." And it doesn't. I've never seen us really get interested in it. But if someone says, "This is a little scary, and this might be a little too much for you guys, but you should try this," that's when our interest peaks.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't know.
I feel like the rewards are sweeter when you actually have risk.
Yeah.
Right? Because if everything is so comfortable, then we're not growing. Mm-hmm. Because growth comes out of discomfort, right?
Exactly.
We have to force ourselves into a route we've never taken or a place we've never been or a situation we've not experienced to actually learn from and grow out of it. And I think Ville and I realized that early on and have always kind of holding both hands, just jump in like straightforward and go with it. And we always know that it's going to be something interesting and we will grow from it. We will learn a lot from it. And yeah, I think that's what we're really passionate about, mm-hmm. that adventure.
In the book, you wrote about how your shoulders would drop a little bit as you relaxed more into the ride as things, you know, stabilized. And I resonated with that because when I'm on a trip, when Cindy and I go traveling, I always kind of notice it. Maybe it's a big exhalation where just this layer of what I left behind leaves, it peels off. And I'm now down a little closer to the essence of who I am. Mm-hmm. And you're writing about your shoulders loosening felt like that to me. And, do you find that to be true in all of your adventures? Like, as you go deeper in, the parts that you're leaving behind in the real world disappear and you become more who you are at a baseline level. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. I think if what's funny is when we do these huge trips and these big adventures that seem like absolutely crazy to most people that we're doing this really big undertaking, we actually have learned, and we learned this by doing, we signed up to do hike the Pacific Crest Trail, mm-hmm. and we wanted to do the whole thing. That hike took us 5 months, and we were dating, by the way. This is a date, and we'd spent a night in a tent together and decided, hey, let's fly to San Diego and go to the Mexican border and start hiking some trail together. And we were 2 weeks before that in Finland, so we had no clue that it was so much snow and going to be so crazy. But one of the reasons we intentionally pick these long adventures is because we all know when we go take a vacation and say you only have 2 weeks out of the year to take a vacation, mm-hmm. you almost don't get quite into that relaxed mode, mm-hmm. because you first get there, it takes you a while to shed, like you said, those layers, those places in your mind that are still stuck at work or what I got to finish or what I got to do when I get back or what I, and then you start shedding those and you finally start to be in that space where you're enjoying your vacation, enjoying your time with your family, your friends, yourself. And then before you know it, you're already starting to stress about having to get on that plane and go back to where your job is, your life is, the work. And so the reason we intentionally pick these big, huge adventures is because we want to be able to get in it and we want to shed those layers and we want that space that we're in to become our life. And the only way to do that is to do a very long trip where you really engross yourself in this life, for better or for worse. And then you really get to learn from it. You really have some takeaways from that life experience. And you have these takeaways that are you become you. They're not just I learned that and now I'm going back, because we've never gone back since then. Yeah. This is our life now.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's on to the next one.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What was the closest you came to giving up the ghost? Just deciding, that's it. That's far enough. We've done this now. Did you ever get to a point where you really thought, what are we doing? You had some adversity mm-hmm. on this ride.
We'll call it adversity, very sure. Yes. Exclamation point. Yes.
I can say for me, there was two occasions that I thought that this might be it, is when we had to fly back to US from Costa Rica about midway through the trip because of my green card. I had to come here and spend some time, a week or so here. And she had picked up a virus from a mosquito in Costa Rica that so far the doctors have narrowed it down to dengue fever. Mm-hmm. And she was just on a week on a couch, just could hardly lift her head. And so we went from that, but she recovered from that, but she was not in the same shape that she was before. And we were heading up to the Andes, and I could see that I was still in the physical condition, but she had kind of like started from ground zero again to build up her stamina or her condition. And it was so hard, especially going to the Andes where we were up to 16,000 feet, and see her struggles. And then the second time is when we were at 16,000 feet and her feet slipped from the pedals, and I saw her fall to the ground in front of the bike, and the bike fell on top of her. And the way it looked, and I thought that she's either dead or she's paralyzed or there's multiple broken bones if everything's fine. The best yeah. case scenario, multiple broken bones. That's how bad it looked.
Yeah.
And then I came to her and when I saw her in the ground, I was like, that's it. We don't have to do this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah.
Did you feel that way, Kristen, at either of those junctures? Because they mostly affected you.
Yeah. So yes, but I don't know what it is in both of us, but probably partially we are athletes. I grew up playing a million different sports. Ville played professional soccer and also was an athlete. And we have this drive inside ourselves that it comes from being an athlete your whole life, of just driving for something and not having a quit. I could quit if I wanted to mentality. Mm-hmm. And so that actually comes more naturally to us. And so I felt all along the way that we would never quit, that if we were to end this trip, it would be an accident or an injury that would force us to quit. Mm-hmm. And I think Ville agrees with that statement. We both were very driven to do this and to be in it. And then, yes, when those situations happened, there was multiple things. I feel like Vile is indestructible. He's kind of like this, like a diamond or something that like nothing happens to.
Oh, yeah, you
can, it's just like...
Yeah, I'll take that, a diamond.
So I feel like nothing breaks you or something. Me, it's just like one thing here and one thing there. And so there was times where I was very much in pain or suffering, but as like, just like life, this adventure, we all deal with trials and tribulations, and all of us have to go through, you know, life, and we don't get to dodge the tough things or the challenging things. All it does is we have to drive through it and then we grow out of it, you know? And so all of these things that happened to me, I knew that they were difficult. And like this experience where I got dengue fever in the middle of it, I couldn't even open my eyes. I was so sick. So in the moment, I was just honestly hoping to survive. But once I could get myself off the couch, and then I was like starting to just even walk again, and then let alone bike ride, I felt like I needed to get back to the bike. We needed to keep going. We had committed to this and we were so driven to finish that it was, even my doctor was like, you should absolutely not be flying back to your bikes in Costa Rica right now. Are you out of your mind? And yes, it does help to be a little out of your mind to do something like this, to be honest. I mean, come on, let's be real. Who wants to be sane fully, really? But
see, I thought you would say the attack of the Peruvian dogs. I thought that would be one of those pivot points, like do we or don't we? And not only does that sound like a movie title or something, but I just thought, I loved that story, even though it's horrific. Vile, you were attacked by dogs.
Yeah.
But then you guys had this magical moment right behind it with these children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like the classic one door closes, another door opens kind of thing. Could you tell us that story?
Yeah, absolutely. So for the listeners... The dogs in Peru are not the dogs in here. They're not the Fifi. They're not the Snoopies. They're like a pack of wolves, and they usually are in packs. And they are very aggressive, and they are very protective of their territory, whether it's a close to a farm or it's just in the middle of nowhere. They're very protective. And we had multiple times we had problems, and usually we had like a long stick that we would just keep them away with those sticks. And we had just done a big climb. We're leaving this town and we're on a downhill. And downhills in Peru, because like I said, we were high up in the mountains. They were sometimes 25, 30 miles long, these downhills. And we would have to take breaks and cool the brakes. And we were just starting on this downhill. Luckily, didn't have too much speed, 20, 25 miles an hour. KG was always riding in front, and she was riding in front of me. She went behind a curve, there was trees, and she yells, dogs. And I heard it so many times in Peru, and I knew to start braking and get the stick ready. And I came behind the curve, I had to finish the turning, and then it was too late. There was four dogs running after her, and then one of them turned, and then all of them turned, and one of them came and just jumped on me as I, and I'm guessing my speed was somewhere 20 to 25 miles per hour. And that's the last thing I remember, is just, I remember the bike stopped, and then I kind of came back to it, and I was on the ground. I was on my side, and I only thing I could hear is KG yelling profanities at the dogs and throwing rocks at them. And then I'm looking, and the dogs, one of them is attached to my shoe, like kind of biting my shoe, and one of them is scratching my leg, like attacking my leg, and this is what KG is trying to get them off me. And I didn't have the cognitive reaction of, or like I couldn't kick them or anything. I was still unsure if my body worked and everything, and I was just kind of dazed. And then anyway, she gets the dogs away and she chases them away. And then you remember probably so, better the next phase.
Yeah, so basically we are in the Peruvian Andes and we're about, what would you say, 14, 15,000 feet. We're very high up and there's nothing. We had just left a very small village. So there's nothing. We're in a canyon. And so when he went down, I threw my bike down and ran and then, yeah, like went into complete, like snapped out of who I am and was screaming and yelling and trying to chase off these wild mm-hmm. dogs. But picked him off the pavement and he was bleeding pretty heavily because he had road rashed all his body. But picked him off the pavement. He came to, he kind of checked, nothing seemed to be broken, and then realized he had some broken ribs, but most of it, the damage was road rash. Mm-hmm. And a woman had walked down from, I don't even know where she came from, a house maybe way up the hill. And she had come down and offered help. And we had found a well nearby. And that well, we just cleaned him off. And I had a little medical kit and cleaned the wounds as best we could. And then we just kept biking because there was not a hospital. There was absolutely nowhere we were going to be able to go. So you just keep moving forward. And then we ended up, by the end of the day, we had come across this house, a little hut, really, and in an orchard of mango trees. And then we had stopped and there was a little girl outside playing with some of her friends. And we stopped. Vile went back to ask if we might camp. And these cute little kids were so excited because they don't see many. This is really very, very remote. So they don't have very many visitors. And they went and asked if we could come, if we were allowed to camp. So we did camp and they were so excited. It was two sisters and then two neighbor kids. And they showed us where to camp. We had the best, most amazing interaction with these kids, pulling apart all our bags, and they wanted to go through everything. They wanted to help us set up the tent. They wanted, and so we went through all of this, and then they noticed all of Vile's injuries because he was still quite bloody. And so they, oh my gosh. And they wanted to help him and help clean up his wounds. And I brought out the medical bag and, but it was just such a really amazing experience that in the morning you had this horrific thing happen where you worried about your lives, yourselves. And then it right behind it, you have this experience where some of the locals, you know, they turn around and help you. And I felt like that happened time and time and time
again. It was a regular feature
yes,
of the trip.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And was the entire reason behind me actually writing a book.
Oh.
Was, yeah, because I felt that...
You didn't know that you were going to write a book?
When
you started out
on
this?
Nope, absolutely not, no. And I say I'm not a writer and everybody laughs because I just published a book, but I mean, I'm not a writer as much as I'm not a cyclist, as much as I'm not a hiker, right?
Yeah.
And I still say I'm not a cyclist and people are like, you're crazy. You bike from Alaska to Argentina. I'm like, yeah, but I'm more of an adventurer, I guess,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I enjoy the adventure. I enjoy both Vila and I love meeting people.
Right.
And when we have these incredible experiences happen to us, and all the kindness that how we were treated by everybody along the way, we feel like for these positive things to keep happening to us, we need to share it.
Mm-hmm.
We can't just keep it to ourselves. And especially sometimes I feel that we are inundated with lots of news, right? The 24-hour news cycle that comes at us from all different directions. And a lot of it seems pretty negative, right? And we can kind of focus on those things. And one of the reasons that Vila and I wrote this book was we chose to go back to schools and Rotary and community centers. And we did a lot of speaking, focusing on this kindness from strangers and our shared compassion and empathy, right, that we can have with each other. And I wanted to write the stories of what really happens, because most of us are genuinely nice. Most of us are kind, and we care about each other. We care about our neighbors. We care that people are happy and healthy. That's kind of what we all really deep down want out of life. And so all of this amazing stuff had happened to us, and I felt like I wanted those stories. I wanted the stories of those children. I wanted the stories of all the different people along the way to be told.
I've talked a little bit before off the air about my conversations with my friend Willie Weir, who's an adventure cyclist, Seattle-based, and he's written a couple of books himself. And the thing he always told me was that when you're riding a bike that is loaded down with panniers, it tells everyone that you encounter, oh, you're on an adventure. Mm-hmm. And that there's this natural curiosity that just automatically kicks in. They want to know where you've been, where you're from, where you're going, what's happened so far.
Yes.
Is that what it is? Is it just the look of you guys coming in with all this stuff on your bikes, fully loaded down with all the things you need to live, that draws people toward you? Or is it just so odd and unusual and not the everyday in these remote places that is what draws people to you?
It's a really good question. I think one thing that comes to my mind right away is probably what your friend can agree on, is the bike takes you on roads that no one else really takes when they're traveling through a country, because we want to get out of the big roads, the main roads. And so these places have not seen usually tourists, let alone a tourist on a bike, was something that we learned fast. We were multiple times told, this is the first time I'm meeting a foreigner. Or,
oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, because we gravitate towards roads that are not used by a lot of people. And and I think we're easily approachable because we're having a fantastic day almost every day, and we're smiling. We're not, you know, we don't look like we're in a bad mood or
or miserable.
Yeah, it's just this, we're not like, I think we're positive people in general, but I think it's this almost this permagrin when you get to live a life where you just get to travel with the person you love and see new places, that I think we're pretty easily approachable. And also, we definitely don't look like we have a lot of money, that we are, you know, someone with their nose up in the air, because, you know, you can tell from our look that, and your friend looks probably in a couple of months, looks weathered and, you know, clothing and everything.
Yeah, I think we're very intentional about smiling.
Yeah.
And a smile goes a really long way. Yeah. And I think that I try really hard, and Vile does too, to smile and say buenos dias and buenas tardes. And in Mexico South, I could say, a lot of these countries, people live on the roads, whether they're hitchhiking, whether they're walking their donkey, whether they're walking to school, whether it's kids traveling to school, families, there's so much more activity on a road. And people going to and from. Mm-hmm. And so we get to pass people all day long. Mm-hmm. And we very intentionally smile and say, buenos dias, buenas tardes, mm-hmm. and wave at everybody. And I think we've really shed that ego, if there ever was an ego. Because if somebody doesn't wave back, because I think our fear of doing that sometimes is, what if they don't smile back? What if they don't say hi back? That is long gone. If they, you know, don't smile back, or they say something nasty under their breath, I tell myself, I feel really sorry for that person. They must have a really hard day, mm-hmm. a really bad life. Something terrible has happened to them. And I move on to the next person and smile at them and say, buenos dias. And most of the time you get a smile and you get a wave, because you've let your guard down. And then they let their guard down. And now all of a sudden you've made this connection with somebody that you didn't, you know what I mean? That you didn't have before. And that's us all day long. And we know, because we get it all day long, that as touring cyclists, I think this is how a lot of touring cyclists know that this happens, and this is how, what we put out, because then we get this really nice, friendly, kind behavior back at us.
The book is called Joyride, A Bike Odyssey from Alaska to Argentina, written by Kristen Jokinen and Ville, her husband. Are you guys married?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Just want to make sure.
Yeah.
Kristen and Ville rode their bikes from Alaska to Argentina in, I think it was 2016 is when you started, somewhere in
June 2016.
Yes. So you missed a couple years of the Trump administration. Good on you for that.
Well, there's a part of it in the story, so I didn't think we fully missed it. Yeah. But yes, it was still, yes, out of the country anyway.
I couldn't help but notice that one of the more interesting and semi-comical aspects of your ride was that you spent a fair number of nights staying in sex motels.
Yes.
This was
true story.
Yeah. This was in the parts of the ride where you just needed a place to stay.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. And they because the first question they ask is how many hours.
Yeah.
And they were always so impressed with me going to them and telling them we'll need about 12 hours.
Oh wow! Congratulations.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, this was not known to us that a motel in Spanish means sex motel. Hotel is
a hotel is more the regular for everybody else.
Yeah,
It's a motel though.
And you could look at a motel in Mexico and it looks like a motel, but it's called a hotel if it's not for an hourly for you know, sex motel. So I would always ask because of money, I would say motel instead of a hotel. Because I thought it would be cheaper, so they would always.
So he would
us.
Ride up to somebody on the side of the
sometimes
road.
Sometimes a couple
asking directions.
Yeah. A couple, and the husband is looking at me like, "No, I do not know where a sex motel." And especially when my wife is right next to me, I can't tell you where it is.
I have no idea where a motel would be, sir.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Until one very nice Mexican person said, "Hey, by the way, you should ask for a hotel.
Yeah.
A motel, you will be guided to a 6 month."
You also spent a lot of time on very busy roads. Mm-hmm. You were remote a lot of the time, and there was probably no traffic for much of your ride, but there were some times when you were on highways and very busy roads and close calls with motorists. Has that changed your view of the motoring public at all? And you had some pretty close calls on those roads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, I never and still haven't got used to listening to auto traffic fly right by you super fast and very loud right next to your face. Because on a bike, it's very close.
Yeah.
Even if there is a
trucks,
bike lane,
you know, the whole nine,
the vortex of what they leave behind themselves really sucks you off the road.
Yeah.
So no, I've never got used to it still, but it's a little unnerving. We try actually to do a lot more back roads and off roads for that reason. I would say what's challenging is when you do a ride this long, you have a lot of time to think and you've really slowed down your pace of life.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do slow down your pace of life, you realize how sped up we have become.
Right.
Right? Everybody's in a hurry to get somewhere, something, get something done, get to the next place, move up the corporate ladder, whatever it is. We're in this mad fury hurry.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're on a bike, you don't get to be in a hurry anymore. It's just not a possibility. It doesn't exist in your life. So when you've slowed way down and then you have the time to actually look around you and be in the nature, you actually start, yes, I felt like I didn't enjoy what we have become with how fast paced we are driven to the next. And being just in the moment, you realize where we have, how removed from nature or these quiet spaces or the slowness of life. A lot of animals you see that have been killed by car traffic are littered along the side of the road. And that's really sad to me that we care so much about moving from point A to point B as fast as possible, that we're willing to take out whatever it is, cyclist or animal or otherwise, to get there.
Right. That kind of leads to another observation I had in the book, and something that you wrote, Kristen, that stuck with me. You talked about how you used to not really listen when you were in conversation with another person, but instead would focus on what it is you want to say next, and that shifted on this trip somewhat. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, very much so. I think that the hurried pace of life that I grew up in, from parents that ran a business to both working jobs and raising three kids and the busyness of life, was something that I just grew up in, that hurried, fast-paced busyness of life. And I noticed only when I started, say, took off on hiking the PCT or doing these rides, that when you're forced to be by yourself, you actually have to start spending time with yourself. And there is nowhere else you're going to hide. And we have a lot of places today that we can hide, whether it's social media, whether it in the house with a bunch with kids, with family, with work, whatever it is. And when you're forced to be with yourself, you start actually quietly listening to your thoughts. You're listening, you're taking the time, you're discovering who you really are as a person. And I think that in that space, I realized that I never was really listening. And the people around me, I would notice when I would spend time, weren't really listening either. They're talking, and I can already see in their mind, they're thinking about what they're going to say next and how they're going to say something that relates to what I'm saying, but they're not hearing me or listening to what I'm saying. And it, when I returned from these rides, when I've gone back into spaces of being around people, I've tried really hard to quietly listen. And listening means not just closing your mouth and looking at somebody or even just nodding, but it means turning your body towards somebody and hearing the words that they are saying and just letting those sit with yourself and taking those in. And I think all of us could practice being better listeners. It just so happens that on these rides and adventures, I learned it. Yeah. I learned it along the way.
That's what a thing to learn.
Yeah.
that's a good one. As you two have told your story numerous times in group settings or in front of, you know, an audience, or in interviews, and you get feedback, I'm wondering if your adventure, especially the fact that you went into it so unprepared, and which again, I think that is the thing, the takeaway for me, is just how little you were ready for this. But I wonder if, because of that aspect of it, if the tale that you left behind has galvanized the people you've talked to about stepping out and trying their own adventure. Has it had that impact? Have you felt like you've sort of paid that urge to go forward?
Yes, absolutely. There's quite a few times. There's one time specifically for me. She had booked us to a high school for 4 days in a row, and I had kind of openly criticized her to her and said, hey, you know, this is a lot. It's a lot, because it's an hour and plus every time. And it was the fourth day, and I was cranky. Didn't get my coffee. We went there at 8 to high school. Did this presentation, and maybe some of the teachers in high schools know this, but like, it, you're looking at the audience and you're like, they're not liking this. But you actually don't know if they are. They just can't tell their feelings. They can't just openly show it. Anyway, after this presentation, there was this guy that was a, I don't know, 6'5", 250 pounds, big guy. And he's kind of like walking, pacing in the behind these girls that were asking us some questions. And then when the girls left, he came to us and he gave me a big handshake and his hand was the size of a shovel. And he said, "Hey, my name's Mike. And I just wanted to tell you guys, listening to you guys talk made me realize I need to pursue my passion. I don't want a bike. That's not my thing. I want to sing. My father tells me I need to play football because I'm this size and he played football and he wants me to play football, but I really want to sing." And it's wow. Like just telling you right now, it just brings me to tears. Like this guy, I could see why he probably was good in football, but him coming to tell that he wanted to pursue his dream of becoming a singer and singing, and that was his passion.
And going against the grain.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And he said, "My whole family wants me to play football. I don't want to play football. I want to sing." And this was a big guy. I realized that moment how much it took from him to admit it to us. But when he was coming out of his mouth, I realized what a relief it was for him too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic.
It's still like, I still remember that moment like it was yesterday.
And for the people that would be inspired or galvanized to action, be it to sing or to ride bikes or to do anything that might be going against the grain of what they were conditioned toward growing up, what advice would you give based on all that you've learned from your adventure?
Yeah, I would say that both Vila and I, our life choices aren't exactly what everybody else would choose to do. But one thing that we have stayed true to ourselves is living the path that is true to ourselves. And I think it's taken a long time for others around us to realize that we are truly happy in what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And even if it's scary, and it's very scary for parents, because we both have parents that, you know, have lose sleep at night, I'm sure, with our style, we'll call it, of adventure and the way we like to travel. I think it's more important to live your passion because you're the only one that's going to stand up for that passion.
Yeah.
And if you think somebody else is going to direct you or guide you or push you there, it's all on you. And the only one who has to live with that choice at the end of the day is you. Mm-hmm. And so as hard as it is, I would say choosing those things that inspire you, that drive you, that you want to do whatever it is. And it doesn't have to be, like Vila said, we would go and volunteer and talk in these schools because we wanted just to inspire some. And it didn't matter if they were into cycling or adventuring or what it was, but we knew that the storytelling of the adventures would be enough to be interesting and exciting. And we hope that it ignites that spark inside somebody that actually says, "Wow, these two bumbling idiots bought bikes and flew to Alaska and they had no idea how to ride them or what to take with them or what to do or how to fix a derailleur or anything on the bike for that matter, and flew to Alaska to go bike ride with $800 per month to spend," which is not much, by the way.
Yeah.
That it would resonate with others. That was the point that we hoped that message would get across in Joyride, that it doesn't take experience. You don't have to be a professional. You don't have to have even the right bike, the right gear. You don't have to have all the experience in the world isn't going to prepare you. I'm sorry to do any of these things, right? But such is life, right? Nothing
exactly
prepares us for life. We just, we dive in and we wrestle through it and we learn as we go.
The book is called Joyride, a bike odyssey from Alaska to Argentina. Kristen and Vila Jokinen, thank you so much for coming to Vashon and sitting down with me today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Can I add, Jeff, that this is truly, honestly, you pronounce my name the best no one has ever pronounced, except for my wife. She's pretty good at it. But you,
yeah,
no, this
mediocre.
Is
yeah.
like, you have nailed it.
I practiced.
Perfect.
Yes. I ramped up for it. And if your book tour doesn't interfere in the fall and you just happen to be in the area,
yes.
you don't need to train for Passport to Pain. You can come up here and do our 10,000 vertical feet over 80 miles, and it'll be like a walk in the park for you guys. It'll be no problem whatsoever. We would love to have you.
So the name Thank is you. Just bad marketing.
Yeah, I know. That's part of the brand. Yeah, I'll tell you more about it off the air.
Yes.
But thanks for coming. Thanks
thank
for being here.
Thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Having us.
Yes, thank you so much.